The time has come.
I like that.
The time is now. For Victoria Stilwell's Positively Podcast. She's a world-renowned dog trainer.
Seen enough dogs today, have you?
She's the host of It's Me or the Dog.
I'm coming to train you.
Along with co-host Holly Ferver.
You don't play around with that name, do you?
I am a fan of Shreddy Balls.
She's Victoria Stilwell, and she's ready to go.
This is a lovely way to start the day.
You get the busy bee. I need to trim her whiskers.
I see some poo here.
I feel a little bit better now because I'm the only one who usually feels stupid during the podcast.
Now, let's head to the studio and get this Positively Podcast started.
Should we let everybody in on a little secret that it's really Wednesday?
Tomorrow is Thanksgiving.
I know!
So we are off.
I love it. We're smiling. We can't wait for the holiday.
Are you going to be with family?
I am. I have an onslaught of mom, brothers, nephews all coming in, and it's great. In-laws and strays, as we call it. We have a huge Thanksgiving, and I love it. Lots of food, lots of people, sitting around playing football. Watching football, doing everything, just it's a great day. What about you?
Yeah, the same. I stay with my American family, go up to the North Georgia Mountains, which is just so beautiful.
Nice.
We're having family coming in from Florida, too.
Oh.
But it's a time when I always miss my British family, even though Thanksgiving is not a British holiday.
Right.
I'm an American citizen now. So, in fact, I'm a dual citizen, so... Thanksgiving is I have to say, my favorite holiday.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a holiday about family, thanks, getting together. It's not about presents.
It's not about gifts.
Eggs or, you know.
No.
I love it.
And you can just be there. And I do. And I do give thanks for all the good things that have happened in my life. But the most important thing in my life are my family. My daughter, my husband, and my mother and my in-laws,
partner.
Even my in-laws, and my broadcast partner, Holly Ferfer, I give thanks for her because she comes and brightens my life.
Yeah, you know, it's great. You have great in-laws. I have great in-laws. I think that's, we're so lucky.
So lucky.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
My I always laugh. My mother-in-law was Blanche Devereaux before Rue McClanahan was ever Blanche Devereaux.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Sugar. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Have you met her?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
I always, I do. I want to because I've heard so much about her. So.
Yes. And my father-in-law looks like Kenny Rogers. He's very handsome. It's kind of a...
Do you know when I was dating my husband, we were in a show over in England and it was Christmas time and my soon-to-be in-laws, well, actually, no, I was just dating then. We weren't even engaged. His parents came over to come and see us in the show and we spent Christmas Eve together. And it was just a really magical time. When I met his father, my husband's father, we were having a discussion about it in the new year about how great Christmas was and how lovely his family were. And I said to him, you know, I'd like to marry a man like your dad.
Little did you know.
That was my roundabout way of saying, when are you going to ask me?
Oh, and it worked. How much longer after that till he proposed?
Oh, about couple of months, 3-4 months.
Oh, so we got
the hint. I forgot when he proposed. It was so long ago now.
Well, Sean, my husband, always says to me, here's the deal. When I first met you, the first thing I did was check out your mom because I knew that was going to be you in about 30 years or 20 years. So that's what he would do is he checks out the moms to see what the wife will end up looking like. And apparently he liked my mom because I got the ring. So.
Look, my lips are sealed. And I'm not going to ask my husband what he thinks of my mother. But stop. I have to say, my mother... At the age of 3 score and 10, she...
3 score?
3 score and 10. That's what my father always used to say. As long as he made it to 3 score and 10, that was it. Which means, obviously, you know, till he was 70.
Oh, I didn't know how much. I was like, I'm going to tell people how old are you when they ask my age, you know, and you never ask it. 3 score and 10.
Yeah. She doesn't... She does not dye her hair. She maybe has a few gray hairs, but her hair's still brown.
Wow.
And she's in her 70s.
I asked my mom, I said, Mom, are we ever going to, you know, am I going to get gray? Are you gray? She goes, I have no idea what my hair color is.
She's dyed it for so long.
She goes, I really could not tell you what my natural color is. I cannot tell you if I'm getting gray. I have no clue. So it'll be a surprise.
Well, I hope that I inherit my mother's genes of not going gray until I'm 80, because she's still, you know.
Or never. Some people never do.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
I would, yeah.
You're a medical reporter.
Well, I think I might have just made that up, but if I say it with conviction,
sounds
I would
good.
Imagine, yes. But do you have a food tradition at Thanksgiving?
Well, yes. We eat turkey in Britain for Christmas, and we have ham, so that was no different. But what I had to get over with was, oh, the phone's ringing in the studio.
It's our, you know why? Because on our hotline, we're getting, we have someone special on our hotline. So we'll let our producer answer that and you carry on.
Yes. Okay. So, as he answers this, I love it because it's live, you see.
Well,
it's not
live,
it's taped, but we do it live.
Live to tape is what we call it.
Live to tape.
But it's okay because we gave away the secret. We have a hotline call, but. Go ahead, carry on. We're still talking.
What was I talking about?
You were talking about your Thanksgiving food tradition.
Okay.
I'm so glad you're like me.
I couldn't. It's called getting old. No short-term memory.
Right.
I couldn't get over the fact that you have mashed potato with gravy and not roast potatoes. Because when we have turkey or when we have roast potatoes with it. That's number one. The second thing
Wait, hold on. So do you have mashed potatoes or do you have roast potatoes?
No, no, they do mashed potatoes.
Okay.
And I'm into that now. Mashed potatoes with gravy. And then
note to self.
They also have marshmallows. The marshmallows...
Marshmallows.
Cooked marshmallows with sort of, or carrots with marshmallows over it.
Do you mean yams, sweet potatoes?
No. Well, they have sweet potato too.
With
but
marshmallows?
But then they do like a really delicious, and my mother-in-law is an amazing, amazing cook.
Are you talking about ambrosia?
No.
Oh.
I'm not. I'm talking about carrots with.
Sliced?
With
shredded?
Sort of. No, sliced. Kind of. Just sort of sweet carrots with marshmallow cooked over it. Oh my gosh. That stuff is like candy.
Well, do you do
wanna drink it?
Do you do like the sweet like the yams with the marshmallows on it?
Oh, maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
Sorry. You were trying to get in that. I was off on one. And you were like okay.
It was orange and it had marshmallows. All right, here's the deal. Stick to dogs, do not cook. Next time
I'm
I come over, we'll order
cook.
It.
I'm
Are
a terrible
cook.
I made soup. I made vegetable soup for my daughter the other day. Vegetable soup and I had, and it looked great. And then I made the mistake of blending it. Because if she can't see carrots and all of that, then she's more likely to eat it. No, I blended it and it tasted horrible.
Oh,
my daughter, she took a bite of it and she was like, Mommy, I don't like this. And I knew she felt bad saying she didn't like it. And she said, Mommy, you're a really good cook, but I don't like it. And I went, you know what, hon? I know I'm not a good cook. I know that. And you don't have to be polite. I know that. And she went, but you can make eggs.
You know, my grandmother, my mom is very thin and her sisters are thin. And it's always says, God bless my grandmother. I love her to death, but she was the worst cook in America. And we used to go up there in the summer. And this was her soup. When you said soup, it gave me these terrible, like, post-traumatic flashbacks.
Sorry.
So what she would do is she would cook all week. And then we'd, you know, like one night you'd have broccoli, one night you'd have carrots with your meal, one night. And then towards the end of the week, you dreaded because all those leftovers, she would blend and it became soup.
No, oh, no.
And it was like this pasty green, brown, gray color in it. Tasted awful.
That was
and
my soup.
Oh my God. And they didn't have a dog, so there was nothing we could do. So I would torture. I'm a lot older than my brothers, so for a while when they were little, I would like hold their mouths open and force them to eat it when no one was looking. Like it was great, but then they got older and bigger and
beat you up.
Anyway, yeah, but we do the sweet. It's like a sweet potato yam, whatever.
That's
you know, the
it.
Yam
there
with
you
the
go.
Mushrooms.
The marshmallows.
Yes, it's very good.
Do you have other
pecans
food?
In there?
Oh, there she does that. That's what my mother-in-law does as well.
Well, you know, I'm from the north. I'm a damn Yankee because you know Yankees they come to the south. Damn Yankees come and stay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a damn Yankee. My husband's from the south. So I grew up on Pepperidge Farm stuffing. I love stuffing. Mm-hmm. My mom makes the best stuffing ever. Well, Sean grew up on. It was like not called stuffing. I can't remember what they call it. It's called dressing. It's chicken and dressing. So there's actually chicken in it. So it's actually a meal. It's almost like a casserole. And it's kind of mushy and it's got like cream of something in there where I'm just used to the fluffy stuffing. And so the first year we were together, my husband, like, you know, was still, you know, he was wanting to be very sweet, but he was like, this is not dressing. I was like, it's stuffing. So now we do the traditional, but now I like his stuffing. And our tradition is my husband's favorite dessert is banana pudding, which I've made for you.
Which you've made for us, and it was absolutely delicious.
So and his mom, she hands down makes a better banana pudding than me. So that's sort of our tradition is I like the stuffing is my favorite thing. I'll go face first in stuffing.
My husband makes great stuffing.
Really?
Yes, it does.
All right.
This could be getting... sorry, that's my dirty mind.
You know what? Here's what we should do, though. We should do Thanksgiving meals when it's not Thanksgiving. Like, wouldn't it be great to surprise our families and just do, like, in March, do a whole Thanksgiving? Because we wait one...
It would not be a surprise for my family. It would be sheer torture.
Really? They don't
But
like
it would.
It?
No, if I made it. I wouldn't be surprised.
I'll make it. You'll come over. You bring the wine. Anyway, how was your show in New Bedford?
Oh, it was fantastic. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I loved the people at the Zeitarian Theater. They treated me so well. The audience was amazing. They were so appreciative. It was 2.5 hours of just real fun and entertainment, and we were all laughing and hanging out. I'm telling you.
Awesome.
And I know I'm tooting my own horn, but my live shows are just fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're just fun, and you get so much information. You learn a lot, and you have a good time. And I work with a great rescue shelter, Forever Paws, that are from Fall River. And these people, salt of the earth again, doing so much to help and rescue animals. The dogs, hopefully we've had some of those adopted. It was awesome. We had a great time.
Oh, that's great.
And it was a matinee, so it was great. So it means my husband and I could go out afterwards and have a date. So we went to go and see Tower Heist.
Movie?
Yes, Eddie Murphy.
I haven't seen it. Is it good?
Oh my gosh, it was hilarious.
Were you
in? It was hilarious.
Is New Bedford outside Boston?
Oh, it's quite far. It's actually closer to Providence, Rhode Island.
Oh, yeah. So where did you stay?
It's about 45 minutes. But we stayed in New Bedford.
Oh, gotcha.
And we stayed there, and we stayed just on the water there with the fishing boats. And, you know, it's perfect storm.
It's a perfect
storm. You know the film?
Oh, from there.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and
that's
Cape
really
Cod
cool.
is very close. So next Thanksgiving, I want to be up in Cape Cod and there because, of course, Plymouth Rock.
Oh, right, right. I bet it's big Thanksgiving up there.
It is a huge, and they have lots of Thanksgiving parades and big celebrations, and I want to take my daughter and my nieces up there.
I'll go.
Would you come?
Yes.
Maybe next year we can tape Thanksgiving in Plymouth Rock.
In a second, I would go. That's really nice. You know, speaking of Thanksgiving, too, I do want to ask you a couple questions because I know this time of year there's a lot of activity in people's houses and it's always, you know, a lot of fun. But people who have dogs, you have to be really careful because I know my dogs, it will take, you know, a split second in any chance they get to steal food and things like that. And I remember last year we kind of had a debate, too, over the turkey bones. And I was always told never give dogs bones because they can splinter. But will you talk about Thanksgiving food safety, especially on dogs? And there's their foods that they, besides chocolate, that can really be harmful.
They can be harmful, things like onions, things like garlic. But, you know, what makes me fear the most, more than even bones, is the fact that we tend to give our dogs treats or, you know, some of the leftover turkey, and that food's very rich, and that can cause pancreatitis. Pancreatitis is not a fun thing for your dog to get, and it can be fatal. So don't feed your dog a lot of the leftovers because they can't take a lot of rich food.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that's the most important, and just keep the food. Keep the dog out of the kitchen. Use a baby gate or some way of containment so that your dog doesn't get to the food. But you know what it's like. I mean, all the smells. It smells incredible to us.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, what is it like for a dog to smell that turkey cooking?
Right.
Oh, poor things.
Right.
So, you know, go out to a good butcher and get a good beef bone. A good bone that's going to be safe for your dog to eat. Some people feed raw bones. I have a bit of an issue with that. Though, again, I don't think I'm so educated on the raw diet, but I'm finding out a lot more about it. Or get just some really good beef bones that are cooked, realizing that some of the, even the big, chunky cooked beef bones can splinter a little bit as well. But totally avoid the turkey or the chicken bones. Now, turkey neck is different. You can give your dog turkey neck because there's a lot of cartilage in that neck. And that can be great. But just be careful.
Be very careful. Okay, good to know.
I wanted to just raise something a little bit. At this time, you know, when we give thanks for all of the good things that we have in life, I do give thanks for the dogs that make my life, for the most part, so much better. Sometimes when I don't want to walk them, I'm like, But no, they do. They make my life better. And I came across a great calendar that was sent to me, and it's called Rescue Dog to Therapy Dog for those passionate about dogs in rescue. And it's 12 inspirational stories of dogs that have been rescued and then turn out to be a therapy dog of some kind. And the first, I mean, for example, is Cedric the pit bull. Look at this.
Pit bulls. Oh my God,
yeah.
That's a beautiful
found
dog.
Found by animal control as a stray walking the streets when he was 1 year old. And he was rescued one day before he was scheduled to be euthanized and placed with a wonderful family thanks to a rescue, a pit bull rescue group. And now he is a therapy dog for children.
Wow, he's beautiful. You know
Isn't
me.
Isn't he gorgeous?
I told my husband, I had a little statement the other day. I said, from now on, we're only having pits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love
great.
Pitbulls.
No, well,
dogs.
They need it because mm-hmm. so many of them need a home.
Yep.
And what's amazing about this calendar is you can't see this, but we're going to put a link to this calendar on my website, positively.com/podcasts. This calendar is, it's an artist who paints your dog, basically. And so they're looking for people for the 2013 calendar.
Oh.
If you have a rescue dog, send in, and then your dog might be painted and put on this calendar. Now, this artwork is divine.
I thought it was a photo. When you showed me that, I thought it was a photo of a
pitbull. This is a painting.
Wow. Oh, it is up close. You can see it as a painting. It's beautiful. And now, does the money go to the rescue organizations?
I don't know about that. I don't think so. But I think it highlights the whole idea
of
these dogs that are rescued and that go to become therapy dogs, or what they do for humans, kind of giving back, as it were. And so if you go to
rescuedogart.com,
or they've also got a Facebook page, facebook.com/rescuedogart. You can find out more about it.
It's beautiful. That's awesome. And I know that it takes a lot to work with rescue dogs and make them therapy dogs, or any dog. And that's why, as the phone rang earlier, we've got one of your trainers calling
yes.
in. So let's get to her, and we can talk a little bit about this. When you rescue a dog, how you sort of incorporate them into the household and maybe get them in the calendar.
The Positively Hotline is ringing.
We don't know what we're going to do. We have no plan. We're just here.
Who's calling in this week?
He went after her like she's made out of ham.
That is interesting. That's exciting.
Is somebody going to answer that?
Hello? Hotline ringing.
You're on your phone, and I don't think you're taking any of this seriously.
Answer the phone!
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go!
On our Positively Hotline today, we have the first ever Victoria Stillwell Positively Dog Trainer, Daphne Robert Hamilton, all the way from Monroe in Washington State, which is close to Seattle, isn't it?
It's fairly close to Seattle.
Fairly.
Yes, because
big
that's,
state.
Yeah, I've never been to Washington State. I've never been to Seattle. I Beautiful. Really want to go there. Daphne, welcome.
Thank you.
And Holly Furfer is my co-host.
Hi, Daphne.
Good morning, Holly.
I'm very excited to talk to you because I'm always asking Vic a million questions, and now I can get another perspective and and lay off Victoria for a minute when I go, what about this? What about that? What about this?
So Daphne's her business is called caninepartnership.com, and Daphne's part of my Victoria Stillwell Positively Dog Training team, and which has now grown to a huge extent. It's basically mm-hmm. a global team of positive reinforcement trainers that everybody that is part of my team has been, I suppose, handpicked. They go through a huge assessment process because I want to have people that are training under the Positively brand to be the best of the best. And so when a trainer becomes a Victoria Stillwell Positively Dog Trainer, these people are the creme de la creme. And we have that one philosophy, positive reinforcement. We believe in the humane teaching mm-hmm. of animals. And again, as I always say, positive doesn't mean permissive. It doesn't mean we're just, have the little treat bags by our side and that's all we do is give the dog treats. We use discipline, but discipline is used as guidance rather than to instill fear. But the positive reinforcement, that whole idea of treating a dog to learn mm-hmm. in a fun way is resonates with so many people across this country. And that's what I love about trainers who train with the Victoria Stillwell Positively Dog Training, is because we all have that same philosophy. We all get results. How has it been for you, Daphne? How do you feel as a dog trainer? What is the best aspect of your job?
Oh, gosh. When I get to play with puppies.
Oh, I'm with you there.
I would say that's the funnest part of my job. But I do see training, like Victoria said, as almost like training for me is like a game. I want the dogs to see training as a game so that they get involved in their training. And the people that I work with are familiar with other ways of training, and their eyes light up, and there's smiles on their faces, and everybody's having a great time. And some of them are a little apprehensive about using motivational or positive training, but when they see their dog so engaged, they can't help but smile. So it's, you know, it is very rewarding for me as a trainer to get that concept across of, you know, you can use positive motivational training with animals, and they just want, you know, they want to engage with you, which is, you know, sometimes a new concept for people.
I love it. I mean, that's what we're all about. It's the dog learning through having fun and learning through being made to feel good.
Have there been any remarkable stories you can share about some dogs that you may have sort of brought back from the precipice while you trained?
Oh, gosh. I think I have a couple. I specialize in dog aggression. So I've worked with several families where they were basically very frustrated and at the end of their rope because they just didn't know what else to do with their dog.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would come in and show them some management techniques and some training techniques, and they saw a huge change in their dog, and their dog started doing better and better behaviors, and it just gave that family, one, a relief.
Right.
But they just had a different view of their dog once they started seeing their dog change and doing more positive behavior. So I actually have several, you know, difficult cases like that where, you know, things turned out for the better.
And you know what I love about you, and you have it on your website, and if you're interested and you're in the Monroe area, the Washington area, then please go to Canine Partnership, and that's K and the number 9, partnership.com. I love the website because mm-hmm. at the top of it, you're saying better relationship between people and dogs, and that you're
yes.
coaching people, you're training dogs. And that's exactly what it's all about, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. You know, the only way for us to make any kind of improvement in a dog is really just kind of educating owners a little bit and showing owners some techniques. Because without the owners involved, there's not going to be a lot of change.
How many dogs do you have, Daphne, just out of curiosity?
I have 2 Rhodesian Ridgebacks.
Wow.
And Isabella just turned 5 this Saturday.
Hey, happy birthday, Isabella. Wow.
Yes.
So, is there one, you know, bit of advice, like a generic advice that you give to people as you're starting to talk to them and work with them, that you would sort of impart on people, and especially for, you know, everyone hanging out with us here on this podcast who may not be able to get to Washington to work with you, but something that you would just sort of like a nugget of wisdom?
Oh, gosh.
Holly likes to put people on the spot.
Sorry. Well, but I mean,
A lot of it has to do with respect, and again, some people mm-hmm. just have skewed perceptions of how they should have a relationship with their dog. I try to set up a win-win relationship with my animals or any animal that I work with. I want them to get something from me, but I want something from the animal as well. It's not about, you know, creating a win-lose relationship. I want to, you know, I want it to be engaging, and I guess that's one of the messages that I tend to give to people.
See, that's great advice. See, there you go. Okay, should we put her on the spot again and give
Let's
her some of
it.
Your questions?
Let's do it.
So we're going to have Ask Vic and Daphne. So this is our Ask Victoria and Daphne segment. I've got some questions.
Can we
from...
do more Daphne than Victoria?
Sure, absolutely. So Daphne, then I'm just going to start with you. If you don't mind, we're going to give you a couple questions, and if you could give
yep.
some advice, that'd be great. This one's from Catherine in Massachusetts, and she says, please help. We adopted a puppy beagle mix and recently figured out she's also part terrier. We have 6 cats, and she keeps attacking them, chasing them, and nipping them. Today she really went after one, and if we hadn't been there, I'm afraid to think what could have happened. Please, how can we train her to stop going after our cats?
I would say the first thing they would need to do is manage the environment a little better so that the dog doesn't always have access to getting to a cat.
Mm-hmm.
So initially there's going to be a little more management needed. And then the training aspect is, you know, teaching the dog a little more impulse control. And there's some impulse control games that you could teach the dog where the cats aren't involved, just to teach the dog the concept of, yes, there's something there, but you need to do this instead. Once the dog gets the concept, then you could start having the dog on leash and then having a cat nearby, and just rewarding the dog to make a better choice, which is, let's go get your toy instead of the cat. Sometimes, depending on how excited the dog is, I will do some games with remote control cars or helium balloons or anything that has a slight motion to it, because that's really tempting to some dogs, is the motion, and just teaching the dog, yeah, there's something there, but I want you to do this instead.
It's all about positive redirection.
Mm-hmm.
Redirecting the dog onto something that you want it to do rather than something you don't want it to do.
Good. Okay. All right,
Daphne. You and I are so on the same page. Isn't it wonderful?
I love that. Daphne, okay, since you do specialize in aggression issues, here's a question from Rachel in Surrey, England. And she says, I want to take on an American Cocker Spaniel who's 2 years old and has been on the show circuit all his young life. He has hated it and developed an aversion to male judges and males in general. He shakes with fear in public situations, particularly if a man comes up to him. He's completely non-aggressive. He seems nervous with me, too, but I was able to stroke him calm. Now, Daphne, I look at that and I think this is, though, maybe an issue waiting to happen, that the dog may not be aggressive now, but they could turn aggressive, especially with that kind of fear, couldn't they?
It could. And I actually come from the show world. I used to compete in obedience, and my previous boy did some show competition as well. And then you have to kind of step back and kind of ask yourself, what's more important to me, scores and ribbons or the health and safety of my dog? So in this situation, I would probably say, you know, can you take a break from showing and really help build his confidence up and work with his fears with men? When he gets more confident and more at ease around different type of men, then I might suggest going back into the show circuit. But right now she's putting him in a compromising situation and actually forcing him to tolerate something he doesn't like. And that's not a great place to be. So
you know,
I would probably recommend pulling him from the show circuit. And again, it's about assessing what's more important to me, the health and well-being of my animal, or is it about scores and ribbons?
Daphne, I don't know whether, sorry, if don't mind me interrupting, I don't know whether you could sort of shed a bit of light on this, but I've always had issue with people that show their dogs, and obviously, you know, dog showing, really it's for the benefit of the person. I mean, what would a dog rather do? Be at a dog show or out in the yard chasing rabbits? I mean, but there are a lot of people there that literally do, it is so for them that they just kind of ignore what the dog needs. And what do you say to people like that who show their dogs and don't really care about the experience of the dog, just care about how many rosettes they win?
You know, that's a difficult position to be. If they are really into the game of showing or competing and don't really tap into their dogs and their emotional well-being, I can only give them a snippet of information and advice. And sometimes, you know, they'll see what's going on with the animal, but most of the time, you're right, it's more of a selfish need that they're doing it for themselves. So that's, you know, sometimes we can't always get to everybody.
But I agree with you. I think definitely that dog should be taken off the show circuit, because it's obviously, even if it hasn't had anything traumatic happen to it that we could consider traumatic, it obviously doesn't enjoy that experience, does it?
Right, yeah. If an animal's really not enjoying it, you're further compromising the dog and might actually further sensitize the dog, leading it up to maybe being more aggressive. But, you know, I wouldn't, you know, if I was that dog, I wouldn't want to be put in situations that were where I'm unsure and not enjoying things either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would suggest that she would take a break from showing and just do some basic desensitization with different types of people and men, so the dog gains a little more confidence and feels a little better through association with men before she tries showing.
Okay, we're talking with Daphne Robert Hamilton, one of Victoria's Positively trainers. VS, what are the initials?
VSPDT, Victoria Stillwell Positively Dog Train.
Love it. Daphne, since we're on that line of sort of aggression a little bit, this is a problem that actually I had that Victoria helped me out with. This is from Anne in Newport, Wales. She says, her Dalmatian is awfully aggressive to other dogs, male and female, and getting worse each day. I've tried training him with treats to distract him, walking the other way, which isn't an easy task, and even crossing the road, and he will still growl and snarl. Try to be social, but he turns nasty straight away. He gets plenty of exercise, but this dog doesn't change the situation. Please help. I'm at wit's end. Daphne, I can completely relate because I had a hound who was the sweetest dog ever, and he just got more aggressive, more aggressive, more aggressive to the point where I couldn't even take him for a walk.
Yeah. So in situations like that, you know, the sight of the dogs get so sensitized to the presence of another dog, they start cluing in on the sound of dog tags and not just the sight of a dog. So now they start hunting for, you know, okay, where's the next dog? So they get very hypervigilant. When a dog reacts at the line of sight of the dog, and the dog might be 3 blocks down the road and it starts going reacting, it just means that we have to find, I call it the sweet spot. We have to find the spot where the dog can perceive the other dog but not immediately go off and have a reaction. That is a timing issue. So you got to find that sweet spot so you could interrupt and redirect your dog to do other behaviors. Or if your dog is able to look at the other dog for a millisecond without reacting, reward that look. And, you know, it does take time. So you do have to work on, you know, finding that sweet spot. And that's a distance and timing thing. But if your dog is always reacting at every exposure that he sees or hears, it means that the proximity or the distance to the stimulus, which is the other dog, is too much for him to handle. Some dogs that either had bad experiences previously tend to use aggression quicker. They kind of act before they ask questions because they were put in a really bad situation before. So dogs that use aggression really quickly, they're really frightened. They're very scared. So it's about giving them enough space so that you could interrupt and redirect. And if they are able to stay somewhat calm and see another dog, start rewarding that calm state. So it's a dicey thing. As far as using food, it's a timing issue as well. Some people wait until the dog reacts to pull the food out and try to bribe or interrupt the dog with the food. When the dog is already reacting, it's much too late to do any training. You're in management mode at that point, which means get your dog out of that situation so that he could calm down. But, yeah, if the dog's already reacting and you're trying to bribe him or get some food in his mouth, chances are he's not going to take the food anyway because he's in fight or flight at that mode. Mm-hmm. So, again, the key points are, yes, you do have to expose your dog to other dogs, but you have to do it in more of a meaningful manner, which is you have to use a little more distance so he's not into reaction mode, and then interrupt and redirect and teach him to do other behaviors. So that's what I would suggest.
Wow, Daphne, you're good.
She is great, isn't
she? Wow, I'm going home to do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, and this kind of training can take a while, and it doesn't really go with our sort of quick fix desires that we as humans have. But when you work on it and if you're patient with it and you're committed with it, then you will see results, and those will be long-lasting results. So, and I would say that, you know, if you do have a problem, you must seek out the help of a trainer mm-hmm. like Daphne, because this is quite intense. I think it's quite difficult for a person just to do it by themselves without that support of a professional by their side.
Okay, Daphne, one more question for you. This is from Lisa in Oxford, England. She and her boyfriend recently brought a 17-week-old Cocker Spaniel cross boxer into the home. She's fine at most things and is gradually getting better at not going to the toilet in the house, but is becoming a problem when we leave her. She starts to chew the walls in the hallway where we leave her, so we get her a cage. And she continually barks when we've left her to when we return. What can we do to stop her from doing this?
Oh, that's a handful.
Yeah.
you know, it's tricky when you first get a puppy. It's so traumatic for puppies to be in a new environment away from their known universe, which is their mother and their litter mate. So, you know, having a new puppy in the home, it's a huge transition for the puppy. And I usually tell my clients, you know, expect to take a few days off when the puppy comes home so that you can start teaching it alone time training. And some of the good breeders actually start preparing their puppies before they're placed in homes alone time training, which means teaching the puppy how to settle in a crate by itself away from its siblings and mother so that when they are placed in homes, it's no big deal. So I would say on the weekends that they would need to do some crate training when they're doing some work in the house like dishes or laundry. So the puppy is confined away from the people, but the puppy can still hear and see the people while the people are in the house. That's a challenging one if, you know, if they need to go to work, for 10 to 12 hours a day, hopefully not longer than that. Puppy shouldn't be in the crates for more than 4 hours. That's a challenging situation. So, you know, usually it's, you know, exercise the puppy before they're put away, give them some chew activities or puzzle toys so they can work on that instead of, you know, entertaining themselves on walls or furniture. But, yeah, that's a tough one. If they need to be away and the puppy's barking all day long.
Or maybe find a dog sitter or somebody who can come in and walk the dog at least till the dog's, you know, grows up a little bit and has that's training instilled.
Because you can imagine what it's like to be You're either with your litter mates and then you get taken away and put in a home and then you're left for many hours during the day, or you're from a rescue shelter, which is traumatic in itself, and then you end up in a home by yourself again and nobody speaks your language. I think there's a lot of anxiety that goes along with that.
Let me ask you a quick question. Do you, my husband thinks I'm nuts, but when I sometimes leave the TV on or the radio on for the dog, I like to leave the TV on so there's something they can look at. Is that kind of nuts? Is that really matter?
It's not. When, you know, one of the protocols for dogs that have separation distress or separation anxiety is what we call a safety cue, which means that you would have something in the house that usually predicts that there's a person around. So usually the TV is only around when somebody's actually sitting down and watching TV, or the radio, or the coffee's going, or maybe you turn on certain lights when you're home. So safety cues are things in the environment the dog perceives that is usually paired strongly with the presence of a person. So if you leave those things on, the dog's like, oh, there must be somebody here. That's why typically you leave the TV on. And sometimes just the white noise or the background noise is enough for, you know, dogs to kind of, you know, settle down. So
not feel like they're alone.
And especially speaking of, transition to Victoria's thing is, you know, sometimes people use classical music to help dogs settle while owners are away as well. So,
yeah, I think that's important because, you know, when we go out, the radio goes off, the television goes off, the lights go off, and then the dog's in complete silence. Some dogs do well with the television. Others don't do so well with the television. They find the noise too much. So that's why we've introduced the whole idea of the classical music and a especially developed classical music that just has a single piano rather than loads of instruments that doesn't have so much noise for the dog to have to deal with and listen to, that can really help to calm a dog down. And then the dog, that becomes a safety cue. The music is played while the person is at home just hanging out with the dog. And then after a while, when that dog associates the music with good things happening to it and the person being there, the music then could be put on just as the person goes out. So it brings along those positive feelings. But I think, you know, Daphne, I don't know whether you, when you hear that kind of question, you go, oh my gosh, because, you know, that's a sort of a separation anxiety, boredom, a puppy by itself. I mean, these are a lot of issues, and there are a lot of issues that can be helped just purely by management. So,
and that's why we need Victoria Stillwell's Positively Dog Trainers, right? Because
you bet.
You're there to save the day. Daphne, thank you so much for being with us. Great information.
Thank you,
Daphne. You're awesome.
Great.
And you can find Daphne's information at K9, that's K, the letter K, 9, the number 9, partnership.com. Or if you're not in the Washington area and you want to find one of Vic's trainers, you can go to positively.com/trainers and find somebody like Daphne in your neighborhood. Thanks again, Daphne.
Hey, Victoria, give me a fascinating furry fact.
The aggressive bark is
Thanks for that, I guess.
I know what you're thinking.
Get
crazy
out of here.
People, crazy dog.
Did you provoke her?
What did you do?
Come on, B.
Did you pinch her or something?
Got anything else?
It costs approximately $10,000 to train a federally certified search and rescue dog.
Yep, she's right about that.
Good to know. Wow, that's a big investment. But, you know, those dogs, if they find somebody in an emergency, there's no price tag you can put on that.
Mm-mm.
Amazing. All right, so are you buckling your seatbelt? Because guess what? It's my turn.
Oh my gosh.
Get to ask Victoria questions in the next Animal Academy.
Let's jump right into the Let's Embarrass and Humiliate Holly segment.
Open your notebook, sharpen your pencil, and get ready.
Give me something to write on.
you're about to attend Victoria's Animal Academy.
Oh, no.
No,
oh,
no. Class is in session.
Yeah, because this is where you get to see how stupid I am.
Well, actually, for the record, I looked for obscure questions.
No,
I was like, just too easy.
Fair.
Nope, she'll know that. So if you get one right, I will be impressed.
What if I get nothing right?
Then I will feel so much better. All right, are you
I'll
ready?
I'll get you next week, I'll tell you.
Okay, pay attention here now, class.
All
right, first question for you, Victoria. Ancient Egyptians revered...
Oh, for goodness sake, seriously, come on.
I couldn't find anything that was harder. Okay. Ancient Egyptians revered their dogs so much, what would they do to mourn their pets passing?
Well, I know they had their pets buried with them, but if their pets... What are you singing for? Is it like... Is
That's
it
the
like
Jeopardy theme.
Oh, it's the Jeopardy? Oh, okay. I don't know. I mean, okay, they would embalm them.
Oh, that would be creepy. No.
Well, they did that with the kings and things, didn't they?
Yeah, I guess you're right. But yeah,
that was a pretty good guess.
My grandfather had an embalmed monkey in his office, in his home office, which was very weird. That would be bizarre. I know. Actually, there were two monkeys.
Bizarre.
I have a thing about monkeys. Okay. So, no, Victoria, the correct answer would be, when a pet dog would die, the owner shaved off their eyebrows, not the pet's eyebrows, their own eyebrows, smeared mud in their hair, and mourned aloud for days.
Are you kidding?
Apparently, they really loved their animals. That's why I love the ancient Egyptians.
Wow.
Yes,
they
I know, right?
They shaved off their eyebrows, put mud in their hair.
And they mourned aloud for days.
Goodness, where did you get that
I know, right? Oh, it took me a long time. Okay, question number two. Kublai Khan owned the most dogs than any person. How many dogs did he own at once?
32.
Come on, your old friend. 5,000.
What?
Well, Kublai Khan was very wealthy. Didn't he, like, you know, kill a lot of people and take over a lot of stuff? So he had a lot of land.
5,000?
Oh. Yes. 5,000. So this leads...
Wow.
I know, right? But he must have had a lot of land or...
Well, he was
a
nasty piece of work. I mean,
right.
Maybe he just used all of his love on his animals and then killed everybody else.
Or he used the animals to, I don't know, to kill everybody else. I'm not sure.
Wow.
I don't know where, but he must have taken a lot of land to have 5,000 dogs. I wonder if he named them all. Feeding time must have been a bear. Okay. How many dogs are there in the world? Coming off of...
I don't know in the world. I know in America there are approximately 76 million owned dogs. But I don't know in the world.
Well,
do I have to guess?
Yes. Come up with a number. No looking at the producer for help.
A billion? 2 billion?
Oh, that would be... No.
No.
There are, it's estimated there are 400 million dogs in the world.
Okay.
That means a lot of people need homes.
400 million.
Yeah.
Is that owned dogs or is that wild dogs?
Oh, I don't know. I would say that's owned dogs, I would think.
400 million owned dogs. Wow.
Okay, ready, Victoria? Question number four.
Because there aren't even a billion people yet, are there?
There's 7 billion.
Oh, shoot.
We just hit 7 billion a couple weeks ago. You might have been busy. It was kind of big news.
Oh, my gosh, that baby, of course.
Yes.
That baby, they got the 7 billionth person. Seriously, it's in the morning. The producer's looking at me like I am.
She's
tired.
She was so busy training dogs, she was not aware of the new births. The last 6 billion people escaped her. Okay, ready? Where did French poodles originate?
Well, France.
Ah, that's what I was hoping you would say.
Why? French? Because they know they originate from somewhere else, don't they?
Yes. It's like who's buried a
They're a German dog, aren't they?
Very good.
Thank you. Oh, my gosh.
Very good.
They're
French
German
poodles
dogs.
Did not originate in France, but in Germany. So why the heck do they call them French poodles?
Because they're taken by the French and poofed up. Made them look ridiculous like they do in dog shows today.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I have a good friend who does that. Anyway,
I'm sorry, I just took a glass of drink of water.
I wasn't going to tell
all
anybody.
Over my microphone and down my mouth.
That's good.
I'm getting stressed.
I love this. Okay, for the record, just to let you know in case this comes up again, poodle comes from the German Pudel or Pudelhund, meaning splashing dog. Some scholars speculate the poodle's puffs of hair evolved when hunters shaved the poodle for more efficient swimming while leaving the pom-poms around the major joints to keep them warm. I personally think that, you know, Hans and Franz
wanted a pet poodle for other reasons to make them look pretty. Okay, ready? Next question.
That was a good question.
What color are Dalmatians at birth?
White.
Oh, see, I threw in an easy one.
I should know these.
Yeah.
If I didn't know these ones, that would be really bad.
So I guess my dog is a white dog, an American Bulldog Pit mm-hmm. Mix, and she started, and it's funny, she was more white. Now she's getting these black spots. I guess it's like the poop
Dalmatian? It could be. She's probably got some Dalmatian. She's probably got some pointer in her.
Oh, wow. Hmm. It's kind of cool. Okay. Victoria, why is Countess Carlotta Liebenstein, or could be Liebenstein, of Germany remarkable?
Is she still alive today?
No. Oh. She died in 1992.
Okay. Why was she remarkable? Because she rescued a lot of dogs and cats. She had a sanctuary. And that's all I can think of.
Good answer.
Who is she?
That's wrong.
Oh,
Why is Countess Carlotta Liebenstein of Germany remarkable? She left approximately $106 million to her Alsatian Gunther III when she died in 1992.
I am stealing that dog. Well, 1992, it's probably not around anymore.
No,
but
it's kind of like the Leona Helmsley. Didn't she do that? Left everything to the dogs. Wow. That was a no win for you. Okay. Here's a multiple choice question because I knew that one was going to be so tough. You have a 1 in 3 chance of getting this.
Gosh.
Ready?
Yes.
What percentage of Americans talk to their dogs on the phone or leave messages on their answering machines for their dogs to hear? 10%, 33%, or 76%?
I think it's 33%.
You are right.
Yeah, because I was going to say even before you did told me the multiple choice, it was around the 30s.
Yes, that would be me. I'm included in that. Mm-hmm. One survey reports 33% of dog owners admit they talk to their dogs on the phone or leave messages on answering machines while they're away. So the percentage that don't admit it, we don't know.
We're weird.
You're doing well.
And I'm doing better than I thought
I was. Okay, now this one is an easy one, and I put this in here last so we can leave on a high note. You ready?
Oh, no. And this is one I'm not going to be able to get.
No, it is a good one.
Okay.
Why do male dogs lift their legs to pee?
Because they are leaving messages on a higher surface. Spreads. If you lift your leg, you're not only leaving the urine on the surfaces, but you're also, there's more chance of the wind carrying the scent to a larger surface area. Plus, you're the big dog in town. The higher the leg, the bigger the dog.
Very good. You are genius.
Oh,
woohoo!
Gosh.
Okay. Male dogs will raise their legs while urinating to aim higher on a tree or a lamppost because they want to leave a message that they are tall and intimidating.
Mm-mm.
And get this one. Here's a little fun fact for you for your Thanksgiving meal when everyone's sharing tidbits. You can tell them, did you know? Some wild dogs in Africa try to run up tree trunks while they're urinating to appear to be very large.
Whoa. Like some men I know.
Yes, doesn't that explain so much in the dog and human world?
So completely.
See, you did well.
But, you know, there are some female dogs that will actually do handstands as well.
What?
I've had lots of dogs, especially Chihuahuas, will do handstands, to mark vertical surfaces.
Okay.
So
this is what separates the dog world from the human dog, because I'm no math or science genius, but what that tells me is that what goes up comes down. And
well,
there's gravity.
They don't mind about that. It's high up on a wall. This wasn't a Chihuahua. This is some Bernard who peed here. Plus, there are some dogs that will... Oh, I'm into this now. Male dogs that will do a handstand against the wall. They all seem to be Chihuahuas. Do a handstand against the wall and smear their poopy. Their poop on it. They will poop on the wall and smear it. Because pooping is also a way of scenting as well.
So just be careful when you think, oh, that's my child's Crayola drawing on the wall. Maybe not so much.
I hope you're really not listening to this while you're eating your turkey.
Yeah, on that note, have a good Thanksgiving. That was fun, though. So, yes, Victoria, have a great Thanksgiving. You did
Thank you very well
in the quiz. Can we do that again?
Yes.
Because
well, please
really
do.
No,
it's really funny. It's great.
Okay.
It's great.
And I promise to get some more weird, fascinating.
Yes.
But I'm telling you, you will use this in a conversation one day. I guarantee almost every single person joining us here, hanging out with us on the podcast, will mention dogs doing handstands or climbing up a tree. No doubt. Anyway, also want to thank Daphne Robert Hamilton for being with us,
caninepartnership.com. I have the best trainers at the Victoria Steele Positive Dog Training Team. The best trainers. Check out our website. If you need a trainer, get one of those people because, I mean, as I said, they're the creme de la creme.
She's amazing. They all are. Positively.com/trainers. And as always, anything you want to find out about Victoria or It's Me or the Dog, follow her on Twitter.com. It's Me or the Dog. Facebook.com, Victoria Stillwell, and join us here next week. We'll see you then. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks for tuning in to Victoria Stillwell's Positively Podcast. For more information, visit Positively.com. Get connected on Facebook as Victoria Stillwell or follow her on Twitter at It's Me or the Dog. This Positively Podcast has been brought to you by Pets Ad Life, who encourage you to get a pal for your pet. Visit PetsAdLife.org or the Pets Ad Life Facebook page to learn more. Be sure to tune in next time as Victoria helps to change dogs' lives positively.